few of us have any idea what sort of creatures we are. If we don't know what we are, how can we know how we should act? How can we know what will really make us happy, what will make us thrive? This book is my attempt to find out what humans are. It matters urgently to me because, despite what my children tell me, I am a human. I thought that if I knew where I came from, that might shed some light on what I am. I can't inhabit all human history. I can't even inhabit my own. So I have tried to inhabit three pivotal times by immersing myself in the sensations, places, and ideas that characterize them. It's a prolonged thought experiment and non-thought experiment, set in woods, waves, moorlands, schools, abattoirs, wattle and daub huts, hospitals, rivers, cemeteries, caves, farms, kitchens, the bodies of crows, museums, beaches, laboratories, medieval dining halls, Basque eating houses, fox hunts, temples, deserted Middle Eastern cities, and shamans' caravans. The first of those times is the early Upper Paleolithic, from around 35,000 to 40,000 years ago, when behavioral modernity appeared. This is a confusing label. As we will see, today's humans behave, even if they don't think or feel, in a dramatically different way from Upper Paleolithic hunter-gatherers. Just what is meant by behavioral modernity and where it evolved are bitterly contentious, but the arguments don't matter for my purposes. Hunter-gatherers were, and the few that survive often are, wanderers, intimately, reverently, and often ecstatically connected to lots of land and many species. They lived long and relatively disease-free lives, and there is little evidence of human-to-human violence. For most, settlement wasn't an option, and even if it had been, it would have been unappealing. Why chew on rusk all your life when you can graze from a vast, succulent, and ever-changing buffet? It was unusual to own much more than a flint knife or a caribou scrotum pouch. If you knew as much as humans then did about the transience of things, it was ridiculous to assert ownership. The world isn't the sort of place that can be owned, and they, unlike us, thought that humans shouldn't behave in a way inconsistent with the way the world is. It was a time of leisure. You can't hunt or gather all day and all night. And so I think it was a time of reflection, of story, of trying to make sense of things. The earliest human art on the cave walls of southern Europe is among the best there has ever been. It is also the most elusive and illusive. To those who might suggest that this is romantic noble savagery, for the moment I'll just say that I don't see that the allegation romantic needs a defense. Romantic isn't a term of abuse, quite the opposite. Romantics just take more data into account in construing the world than do their opponents. The second period is the Neolithic, which is conventionally supposed to have started around 10,000 to 12,000 years ago, and lasted until the dawn of the Bronze Age, say 5,300 years ago. Chronology is contentious, and the transitions between phases vary significantly between regions, and of course there's no clear boundary between the different eras. Some hunter-gatherers started to settle for some of the year, while continuing to wander for the rest. No doubt they started to manage the land, perhaps by planting trees whose fruit they liked to eat, long before anything like systematic farming happened. But nonetheless, the division was eventually very real. Wanderers stopped wandering. Their geographical world became smaller. They no longer had to know and relate to a huge number of species. They could get by, and eventually had to get by knowing just the cow, a subdued and truncated aurochs, in the field behind the hut, and one species of specialized grass with big seeds. It didn't take long, a few thousand years, before everything, including humans, was subdued and truncated.
Thank you for listening to this clip provided to you by Macmillan Audio. To hear more, look for this title wherever audiobooks are sold.